This is Friday, the 8th day of April, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming your way, the U.S. Secretary of State makes an unannounced trip to Baghdad. What happens next in the wake of the revelations contained in the Panama Papers?
On the whole, I think what we have here, even beyond this particular leak, is a global trend to simply not tolerate corruption.
That at least is the hope of one commentator. And we look back on the history of one of America's top-rated television programs, which ended a 15-year run last night. It's all coming your way. Let's start now with the declaration by the U.S. Secretary of State that Islamic State extremists are losing ground in Iraq. Their leaders and fighters are being eliminated, and the group's rank-and-file members are losing hope. That is what John Kerry said today, part of a lot of things he said today, when he made an unannounced visit to Baghdad. Joining us now is VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins, who has been traveling with Secretary Kerry. And Pam, give us an overall view of what happened and why he made that trip.
Sure. This was a packed one-day trip to Baghdad for Secretary of State Kerry. He met with Iraqi Prime Minister Abadi, the country's foreign minister, and also the prime minister of the Kurdistan Regional Government. The main focal point for Kerry was to show support for the Abadi government. The prime minister is going through a cabinet reshuffle. And also, Kerry's visit comes at a time when an Iraqi-led effort is underway to retake the city of Mosul. Currently, there are about 3,800 U.S. service personnel members in Iraq. Kerry said later in the day during a news conference that Iraqi officials did not ask for more U.S. troops. However, the U.S. did announce additional aid. It's giving an additional $155 million in new humanitarian assistance to Iraq to help with the efforts to help those who've been displaced.
Well, again, let's look a little bit about the possibility of more forces, U.S. forces, headed to Iraq. Kerry said that no specific Iraqi request for additional American troops. Anything further we have to drill down on that?
Yes, his comments come at a time where there has been concern in some circles that the effort to retake Mosul has stalled, and there is perhaps a need for additional outside support for that effort. But Secretary of Kerry seemed to indicate that the Mosul effort operation is still in its infancy stages, that Iraqi officials are coming up with a plan, and the U.S. is going to support that plan as it moves forward.
Pam Dawkins is VOA State Department correspondent and who travels the world with the Secretary of State. Where are you now, Pam?
I'm back in Bahrain. We started our visit here yesterday. Kerry met with the Gulf Cooperation Council, a group that has been quite concerned about Iran's recent provocative actions, actions that the group views as destabilizing to the region. This is part of a week-long trip for Kerry that includes the Middle East and Asia. Later in the week, he will travel to Japan for a G7 summit, and he'll also visit a World War II memorial in Hiroshima.
Pam, I thank you very much, as always, for joining us here on International Edition, and enjoy the rest of your trip.
Thank you.
Let's move on now to Belgium, to Brussels, where two Paris police officials are now confirming that a key suspect in the November 13th attacks in Paris have been arrested there in Belgium. The officials, who spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak about the Belgian investigation, confirmed the arrest Friday of the last identified fugitive in the Paris attacks, his name Mohamed Abrini. The Belgian Federal Prosecutor's Office said Friday it had made several arrests linked to the March 22nd attacks, but they did not name Abrini, who has never been called a suspect in the Brussels bloodshed. In the face of protests, Greece has resumed deporting migrants to Turkey, all part of a controversial European Union-Turkey deal which seeks to stem the flood of migrants in Europe. These deportations come as human rights groups voice alarm about what's going on. Dorian Jones has more from Istanbul.
Two vessels carrying more than 100 deportees arrived in the Turkish Aegean port of Dikili, Friday, after making the short journey from the Greek island of Lesbos. Most of those deported were Pakistanis. Upon arrival, they were fingerprinted, underwent a health check, and sent to detention centres, where they faced the prospect of being sent back to their home countries. On Thursday night, the Turkish parliament ratified a readmission agreement with Pakistan. Human Rights Watch condemned the deportations. The group's Andrew Strohlein says Turkey is not an appropriate country for returning refugees.
Turkey can't even be regarded as a safe country of asylum for refugees. I mean, it doesn't provide effective protection for refugees and has repeatedly pushed asylum seekers back to Syria.
In a recent report, London-based Amnesty International accused Turkish authorities of deporting more than 100 refugees to Syria on a daily basis, a charge Ankara strongly denies. On Monday, nearly 200 refugees were deported to Turkey. The move prompted a surge in asylum requests by migrants, delaying further deportations until now. The European Union has said it hopes the deportations will discourage future migrants from seeking to illegally enter Greece from Turkey by way of the perilous Aegean Sea. The number of people arriving on the Greek islands this week was reportedly down. The Turkish Coast Guard has stepped up its efforts, but Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sent a warning to the EU Thursday over the future of the deal.
Avrupa'dan gelir mi? Buna bakmadık. Şu anda verilen sözler var.
There are precise conditions, he says. If the European Union does not take the necessary steps, then Turkey will not implement the agreement. Everything that has been promised under the accord must be put into action by the EU, he said. The EU has committed itself to give more than $6.8 billion in assistance, along with a commitment to accept one refugee from a Turkish-Syrian refugee camp in exchange for every deportee sent to Turkey. The regional grouping also is committed to providing visa-free travel to most EU countries for Turks by as early as June. Observers say such commitments are likely to prove difficult to deliver. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Well, joining us now is our social media editor, Andrew Pelcheski. He has a look at what's trending today. Andrew, what's the Vatican is making some news today.
The Vatican is making some news. You know, they say you should never, the two things you never talk about are politics and religion with friends and family. But
now we have
social,
both. Yeah.
Now we have both on social media. So we started out the day the Vatican was trending because Pope Francis came out and said that the church should focus less on dogma when it comes to things like contraception, divorce, that they should be more embracing. So a lot of praise for Pope Francis on those issues this morning. And then as the day went on, the Vatican was still trending, but for a different reason, and that's presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. He apparently invited himself to the Vatican for a conference on the economy and the environment next week. The Vatican went back and said, oh, well, it was a monumental discourtesy for him to invite himself. In fact, monumental discourtesy is now a trending term on social media. But you have this back and forth, and of course, this religious topic, the U.S. politics are also involved because Bernie Sanders is running for president, so you have his supporters coming in saying, oh, well, he was invited by the Vatican, it's a misunderstanding. Then you have Hillary Clinton supporters coming in saying he basically stepped all over, you know, the Vatican. Bottom line, though, my favorite tweet was somebody took Bernie Sanders' face and photoshopped it onto the Pope. Now, I don't think that's ever going to happen. Bernie Sanders is Jewish.
No. Yes.
I don't think he's ever going to be Pope, but a lot of talk about this trip. It's coming next week. We'll see if it ends up being a monumental discourtesy. If it gets him headlines, who knows?
It's going to get him headlines.
I think it will. Certainly it'll be the talk of social media. It already is.
Thanks, Andrew. Social media editor Andrew Pelcheski. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Canadian researchers have found that nonverbal human sounds of emotion, such as a scream of anger or alarm, a cry of sadness, or a laugh of joy, are able to better communicate feelings than spoken words. Writing in a study published by the journal Biological Psychology, the scientists from Montreal's McGill University also discovered that our brains respond in just 1/10 of a second to these non-spoken vocalizations. They say our ability to quickly recognize the non-spoken sounds of emotion was a matter of human survival long before language was developed. Working with 24 research subjects, the scientists found that sounds of happiness, like laughter, registered quicker with the volunteers than sounds of sadness or anger. but angry sounds and speech produced longer-lasting brain activity in their subjects' brains than either happiness or sadness. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. U.S. stocks sunk to their biggest loss in a month and a half Thursday as banks and technology companies tumbled. Interest rates moved lower, hurting financial stocks. The dollar continued to fall compared to the Japanese yen. Stocks have fallen 3 out of 4 days this week. Not a good picture. From International Edition's New York Bureau, we again welcome our business correspondent, Jill Melandrino. With look so far at today's activity, is there salvation in the numbers today?
Well, there certainly is. Stocks opened significantly higher on Friday as oil and the U.S. dollar were in recovery mode following losses on Thursday that sent the S&P 500 actually back into the red for the year. The surge, the latest in a week of very volatile market moves, but it's really despite any major news to justify such swings that we've seen this week. Coming into trade today, oil was up more than 6%, boosted by expectations U.S. production will continue to decline, and optimism about the U.S. economy, which was once again fueled by commentary out of the Federal Reserve last night as Janet Yellen met with former Fed leaders Alan Greenspan, Paul Volcker, and Ben Bernanke. So again, we're seeing the Fed come to the rescue with commentary on the economy. And essentially, they're saying that we don't see ourselves in a bubble like we were back in the financial crisis.
It appears to me that investors are looking for things to worry about.
That certainly is the case, and they will have the opportunity next week as Alcoa kicks off the unofficial start to earnings season on Monday, followed by the big banks, which start reporting on Wednesday with J.P. Morgan, followed by Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Citigroup. So that's really going to be the tell right there because the banks are so married to what monetary policy is being dictated out of the Federal Reserve. And this low interest rate environment makes it tough for earnings and growth. So it'll be interesting to see how they report this week.
Well, go home, enjoy your weekend, and don't think about it.
Thank you very much.
Jill Melandrino reporting with us and as part of our team here at Voice of America and International Edition. This indeed is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. It's been almost a week now since the world witnessed the biggest data leak in history, what is now being termed the Panama Papers. 11.5 million documents from Panamanian law firm Mossack Fonseca were released by a massive global reporting partnership of over 100 publications, all led by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Well, that organization's analysis of the documents of individuals and companies from around the world showed that many set up shell companies and offshore accounts in low tax havens. Such accounts are a favorite tool to evade taxes, launder money, or to pay bribes, though they also have some legitimate uses. Among those implicated, Vladimir Putin of Russia, leaders in many nations like Iceland, China, Venezuela, Argentina, Malta. We welcome to International Edition Frida Gidas, a world affairs columnist, author, and consultant. Her work has appeared on CNN, in the Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, Philadelphia Inquirer, and scores of publications in the U.S., Europe, and the Middle East. Frida, thanks so much for being with us. Well, now that what might be called the first level of disclosed information has been made public, what comes next? What's the next revelation here, do you think?
I think we're going to be hearing a lot more details from this consortium, and my understanding is that they're not going to upload all their documents onto the web so that we can all do our searches, which would really create all kinds of problems all over the world. But I think what we're going to see is a divergence. I think some countries are going to take this very seriously. Other countries are going to try to quiet it, to dismiss it, to treat it as a non-event. And we're going to see the world moving in two different directions. But on the whole, I think what we have here, even beyond this particular leak, is a global trend to simply not tolerate corruption. And I've actually been writing about this for a long time. I think many people around the world have had enough of this notion that somehow corruption is just something that we have to tolerate. And I think this leak is going to add fuel to that fire.
Well, this is nothing new. We have all heard rumors. We have heard reports as we were all growing up that this has not only happened in the past decade, but decades and decades. That's correct, right? This has been going on almost forever.
Exactly. And, you know, this is really confirmation. I don't think anybody's shocked at the information that we're hearing. But it does have an impact. You know, this confirmation does have an impact. I don't know if you remember when the WikiLeaks communications were released, there was one particular item that talked about a party in Tunisia where the son of the Tunisian dictator had ice cream flown in from France for his guests. And, you know, the people of Tunisia, they knew that these things happened, but it wasn't very long after that we had an uprising there, and people mentioned it, people talked about that. So these things really, really add fuel to these concerns, to this irritation, to this annoyance, and the sense that this has to stop.
Well, one might think that this revelation or these leaks from the Mossack Fonseca law firm in Panama is probably only, as you say, the tip of the iceberg. Do you expect this to continue and expand?
I think we're going to be hearing about this for a long, long time. I think we'll be hearing about this for years, in fact. And I think we will be hearing and feeling the repercussions for a very long time. We don't know where this came from. Somebody, it's an anonymous leaker, and there are all kinds of theories, all kinds of conspiracy theories about where this came from. But the fact of the matter is that in this digital age, when information can be transmitted so easily, can be made so compact, can be transmitted without ever having a face-to-face meeting, this is just one company, possibly one person. We could be hearing about other firms that do the same kind of work. And I think we are coming to an era where you just cannot keep secrets. And that's going to bring a lot of change. The end of secrets is a transformative event, a transformative process in the history of the world and in the wielding of power.
That is commentator Frieda Gitzes, and we thank her for being with us. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frieda Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
After 15 seasons, launching the careers of such pop stars as Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood, and Jennifer Hudson, American Idol has now ended its run last night on American TV. International Edition's David Burr talked with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the show and its legacy.
The producers of American Idol are keenly aware that the landscape is changing a bit, that particular arena, that sort of like talent contest reality show arena is crowded. And I think also it's about saying we were the first, we were the best, and maybe we need to get out of this before there's a term called jumps the shark, meaning it's getting to the point where now people are getting tired of it. It's no longer good. It's going to lose its reputation to glory. So let's just kind of jump off the ship before it sinks, if you will.
And it was the prototype for several programs. I mean, Simon Cowell, the original producer of what was called Pop Idol in Britain, brought it to America, and he did American Idol for several seasons. Then he left and went and did The X Factor, which is another singing judging show. You've also got America's Got Talent, mm-hmm. which has got a panel of judges. You've got The Voice. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Dancing with the Stars, So You Think You Can Dance. It's the same show, basically, with different slightly different content.
It is. And what's really interesting is before American Idol, when you thought about reality show, so you thought about Survivor or The Real World, the I don't know if Amazing Race was out at that time, but this was the first time when I think Americans here, and I'm sure this was also the case overseas, felt like they could participate. They had a vested interest in what was going on because they got to choose the winner. As before, we were just sort of observing what was going on in reality. This time, as viewers, we were participating in creating a certain reality. And that was very exciting. And I read somewhere, interestingly enough, that American Idol was largely responsible for the increased usage of text messaging, because when they first started to introduce text messaging in the voting process, many people weren't using it. And Ryan Seacrest literally had to spend like 4 minutes during the show explaining to people how to text message.
That was also when texts cost you money.
That's when they cost you money, absolutely. And now you don't even text. Now you can go online and you can vote online. There's so many different ways, via Facebook, Twitter.
They have an app.
Some of these shows
have an app, and they actually have the performer's face, and it's like, you know, vote for this person, and you touch the face, and boom, your vote has been registered. Thank you.
Right. So interesting to see how the show and technology have grown together.
So what do you think the legacy of American Idol is going to be?
Well, I think the one thing that we will walk away with is, as I said earlier, it changed the way Americans interacted with television. I think that was probably the biggest thing. It is the first show that I remember being fully interactive in the way that it is. And I think, too, I mean, Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood, Jennifer Hudson. I mean, these are huge names when we talk about American popular culture. American Idol was responsible for introducing the country to, and the world, really, to our favorite pop stars and country music stars and R&B stars. That's the other thing that I loved about American Idol. Though there was some controversy for a few years, they were the artists that won across various genres.
So are you an American Idol fan? Who is your favorite winner? What do you think about it going away? Well, you can hit Shauna up on Twitter. She is at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA underscore music. And you can hear Shauna's show, The Soul Lounge, on our website, voanews.com.
That's David Byrd, and that's our program. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nigeria is a diverse country with a large and assertive civil society, a rich culture, and huge potential. It is a country with an almost boundless capacity for economic growth. And the United States wants Nigeria to succeed. That is why the United States and Nigeria just relaunched the U.S.-Nigeria Binational Commission with a high-level strategic dialogue in Washington designed to expand mutual cooperation across a broad range of shared interests. The United States, said Secretary of State John Kerry at the Commission's most recent meeting in late March, is encouraged that under new President Muhammadu Buhari, Nigeria has made a commitment to diversify its economy. Secretary Kerry then announced that this year, U.S. aid to Nigeria will top $600 million. A significant portion of this money will go toward halting the misery that is spread by HIV/AIDS, by malaria, and by TB. More funding will go towards strengthening Nigeria's energy sector through President Obama's Power Africa initiative, and the Feed the Future program will help improve agricultural efficiency and raise rural incomes. Together, said Secretary of State Kerry, we will work to address humanitarian and development needs, especially in the country's north, where the lack of opportunity has been holding people back, and where the terrorist organization Boko Haram has murdered thousands and disrupted the lives of millions. Thus, the United States will support Nigeria's efforts to once and for all defeat Boko Haram and to eliminate the conditions that have seen the genesis of this terrorist group and that aid its recruitment and operations. These include effective governance, the creation of good jobs, and the elimination of corruption. Our purpose, said Secretary of State Kerry, is to map out the next steps for cooperation in all of those areas where we need it. This doesn't transform things overnight, but, he said, it moves us steadily forward. It creates momentum in the right direction, and that is good for Nigeria. It's good for the United States, and frankly, if we can get this right, that will really make a difference to the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.